paid 260 euros for a pair of Crocs, man. Those shoes pretty much broke my foot.
It's only going downhill from here.
What up, guys? This is Josh.
And this is Fobs. And this is the Kickback Pod.
And we are back once again, the Kickback Pod, episode 71. Back once again with my man Fobs after, I would say, a bit of a short hiatus. Let's just say we were busy watching football. That's what the last month has been. And I definitely feel, I don't know about you, man, Fobs, but right now I feel a bit empty without football.
Dude, I was literally thinking the same thing today. Like, the Euros are over. Spain won. The best team won. Congrats to all Spanish people in the world. I think it was quite clear that Spain was the team to beat from the early days. Definitely. And I'm glad I got to see them in person. I went to the Spain-Croatia game, which Spain won 3-0.
Oh, that's right. Oh, man. Well, what were they like in person? Because on TV, you know, the passing looked so crisp, so smooth.
They were very direct, very quick. Nico Williams, great player. Yamal, I mean, such a gem of a player. Insane. Yeah, I thought they were cool to watch. Very different to the Spanish team that, you know, dominated the 2008 to 2012 kind of, where they won the Euros, the World Cup, and then the Euros again. I'm just, you know, obviously as a German, I'm very sad that Germany ended up losing to them. And I think with handball, maybe things could have been a little bit different. Maybe not. You never know. I do think that the two best teams were Germany and Spain in the end.
Yeah.
And it makes me quite happy that England lost in the final, because, you know, it's just funny. I think most English fans are not super arrogant, and they kind of have this like irony about themselves and this like self-deprecating humor when they sing "It's Coming Home." They don't actually think that they're great. They're the greatest footballing nation, because what have they won? They won the World Cup in 1966. In the modern era, they have won nothing. They have done nothing of note.
And they hate, they've always, you know, hating on Gareth Southgate. But if you look at what he's done since like the last few years, ooh, I mean,
I don't know. I feel like he's underperformed. He's done that. Like, they've gotten that far in spite of him. I think Gareth Southgate, that's a very, very big topic of discussion. We could do a whole episode about that, because I feel like, yes, on the one hand, on paper, and when you're looking at results, he is the most successful England manager of all time, apart from obviously a manager that won the World Cup. But his run of results have been very good, especially since 2018. But look at who they faced. They faced some very, very easy teams. They've always lucked into the easy side of the draw. They've never played particularly well and have always made it past. And I mean, okay, some people say that's like the DNA of a champion, like, you know, getting through even if you're not playing at your best. But what about a team that is never at their best, unless they're playing like a Trinidad and Tobago type country, you know, like where they're hitting 3, 4, 5, 6 goals past them. So I don't know, man. I think he's overrated.
I mean, you bring up a good point about how they've always kind of been on the easy side of the bracket in every tournament, but you can't really fault them for that, because at the end of the day, you can only really face the teams in front of you, and your job is to beat them, and they have. They seem to make it to the last few games, and that's when they stumble.
But I think as like someone who wants to see them lose, it's sweeter the closer they get, you know, because they get all excited. They're like, oh, maybe this time is the time. And then they still lose. And Germany, or the German language, has a great name for that. It's Schadenfreude, which means, you know, the joy of someone else's pain, which I think a lot of football fans can relate to. It was a very good Euros, and I am, like you, I'm feeling a little bit empty. But the good thing about years where we have the Euros or the World Cup in the summer is that it's never too long until the season starts. We've got end of July now, and in August, all of the, you know, league seasons, and then obviously Champions League, etc., will be kicking off. So we don't have to wait too long for competitive football again.
We're going to be having the Olympics in 2 weeks' time, so there'll be a lot more team sports, individual sports. I can't wait for basketball in particular. And of course, right after that, we have, you know, the beginning of Premier League season and all that.
Exactly.
Actually, speaking of basketball, what do you think? What's your thoughts on Mr. Bronny James?
Bro, I mean, I think, did you see that thing that with Jaylen Brown, where?
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah. Where they caught him on camera.
He was sitting courtside, and I think it was like Aja Wilson or whatever her name is, or Aja Wilson. He was like to her, man, Bronny's not a pro. And then she's like, yeah, I think he's going to be playing in their D-League team. And he was like, nah, like he's just not got it. And it went viral. And I think that just kind of encapsulates it a little bit. Like, it's 100% he only made the NBA because of LeBron. The Lakers only drafted him because of LeBron. Like, it's a bit ridiculous because this dude averaged, what, 3 points in the NCAA playing for USC?
He
wasn't a starter there. And then he commits. I feel a little bit bad for him, and you never really know what's going on behind the scenes, right? But, like, is it, like, pressure to, like, make that moment of playing with his dad? Because he's very, very, very obviously not NBA-level talent, and I think even 4 years in college, he might never be an NBA level talent. But hey, man, for a season, you know, he's like, what's the difference between him and Tanasis or Alex? Yeah, no, right?
I mean, like that's the thing, you know, like nepotism. Like, we're acting like it's something new. It's been in the NBA since forever. And it's been maybe the first time that it's so in our face. But if you look at pretty much executives and coaches in the NBA,
for sure,
man, it's all people promoting their sons to, you know, head of basketball operations or assistant coach. Like, it's been existing since forever.
Oh, for sure. And I mean, even outside of sports, when you go into like corporate life and even family businesses are obviously run on the whole nepotism thing, right? But you would hope that most family businesses try and set up the next generation education wise so that they can actually successfully take over the business. But the thing with Bronny, in my opinion, is it's so egregious. Like, this dude, he would not be able to play in Europe even. Like, we're laughing at
or China for that matter,
dude. LiAngelo Ball, right? Like, we were laughing at that dude, but that dude would smoke Bronny, dude. That guy was not good enough the NBA. He like bounced around in the G League and then he went overseas again. That dude was, everybody was like, oh, he's only getting a contract because of LaMelo and because of Lonzo, etc. And like, yeah. But ultimately, he like was bounced from the league pretty quick, and that dude would smoke Bronny in a one-on-one. I think Tanasis would smoke Bronny in a one-on-one. So I think Bronny doesn't even have the skills to play in Europe at a decent level.
About Tanasis, that should be pay-per-view TV. I would love to watch one-on-one. Tanasis versus Bronny.
Bro, 21-0, man, every single time. Like,
You think so? Like, Tanasis is that much better than Bronny?
Man, first of all, you're comparing a boy and a man. And second of all, Tanasis, like, that dude is a FIBA legend, man. Go look at his highlights in Europe and playing for the Greek national team. That dude can ball, like, straight up. And, like, yes, he probably wasn't good enough for the NBA, but I would say, like, as you're like 14th, 15th man, whatever, man. Like, he could put in like a shift in garbage time. Bronny, I don't think Bronny could even put in a shift. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I mean, it was clearly like a tax. It's like, listen, you want me to re-sign here, then you're going to have to draft my son. I mean, I think it was pretty clear what the stipulations were. So, I mean, I still think it's pretty cool that a father and son are teammates on the same team. I mean, we have never seen that, and I don't think we will ever see that in our lifetime again. So I still like part of me thinks that's really cool to see on TV, you know, like imagine like a Bronny throwing up an alley-oop for his dad. Like that's amazing to see that on TV. So I'm kind of excited to see them share the court and just kind of like play a few minutes together. I know, okay, there's a whole, you know, storyline about how he, whether or not he deserves to be there. I mean, I just hope Nike, you know, doesn't give him his own shoe or something like that, because then it's ridiculous.
There's no way.
And actually, speaking of Nike, guys, that is the main topic for this episode. It's already minute, I don't know, 10 of this episode before getting into what the main topic is. As you guys might have heard, Nike has been in the news a lot lately for all the wrong reasons. There's been a lot of problems at the swoosh with their financials, with the competition catching up to them, and we're gonna get into all of the problems currently being faced by Nike, how they've kind of gotten away from doing what they have done best in the past, and we'll be giving our take on what their biggest problems are right now, and also our take on what seems to be their new strategy going forward. So lots and lots to discuss there. But before that, we will get into our listener of the week, who is Mr. Sneakerhead BH. Shout out to you, man. Thanks for listening to the pod. Let us now get into what have we been wearing lately. Fobs, you kick us off.
Oh, man, I've been going for comfort and just ease of access. I've been wearing a lot of my ASICS Gel 1130s in the beautiful hairy suede beige colorway. Super comfortable shoe, fits with everything. Can whip it on with shorts, with long pants, just wear it around the house when I'm naked, you know. That's the kind of vibe that I've been going for this summer, because I'm just kidding, but it's been brutally hot, man, in Berlin some days, and you know how it is in Germany without AC, right? So you're wearing as little as possible. So for anyone coming to visit me in my place, make sure you ring the doorbell and knock before you come in.
Oh, you'll just find Fobs there butt naked with his ASICs on.
Exactly. Got to be comfortable at all times. So I've been wearing those, and then I've been wearing a lot of the SNS GT2, the Adidas collaboration that they released this summer. Super nice shoe. Honestly, like, I've been wearing this a lot to the playground with my son, and it's a shoe that I can slip on without any socks. It's, you know, relatively comfortable, and like Josh just said, really looks nice. The green upper with the pink detailing, just, yeah, fire, man. So big fan of those. And yeah, those are the two shoes that I've actually been wearing the most the last couple of years, couple weeks. What about you, man? What have you been wearing?
So I've been wearing a shoe from last summer that I picked up that I actually didn't get a chance to wear at all last summer, because I got it towards the end of the season. And that is the Jordan 1 Low Shashiko, or I think it's called the Denim something. Or it's just called the Shashiko. I don't know. I've seen different names for it. But it's such an awesome shoe. I don't know how it got so slept on. I love the denim details on it, all the fraying details, also the very intricate embroidery on it, which is very typical of Japanese Shashiko-style designs. And it's just such a beautiful shoe. And it looks like a custom. It doesn't even look like something that Jordan brand is, let's say, capable of making. So I'm very surprised that they released something like this just as a general release. They were super easy to get. You can get them on StockX right now for, I believe, even under retail. And they're just an awesome shoe. I love wearing them. They're very comfortable as well. The other shoe that I've been rocking pretty much straight for the entire period of the Euros is the Kith 8th Street Samba, because I realized that pretty much this whole month I've been wearing nothing but football jerseys, Germany jerseys or whatever, Canada, Colombia jerseys. And you, of course, you know, need to wear a pair of Adidas with these jerseys, because all of these jerseys are Adidas jerseys. And when I'm looking at like all the Adidas pairs I have, the only pair that is like super neutral and just goes with anything is this pair of 8th Street Sambas that I have. So I've been wearing it all the time, like pretty much anytime I go to watch a match at a bar or anywhere else, I've been rocking my 8th Street Sambas. And like I've said earlier, the most comfortable pair of Sambas I own. I mean, they're great. It's too bad that they just, you know, look super dirty and there's nothing you can really do. You can't really clean the sole or anything like that, which sucks. That's like my biggest gripe with all of these like Clarks / Adidas collabs that Kith has been putting out. But yeah, I mean, it's a pretty nice shoe. And then lastly, I did go to a wedding a week ago in Italy. I wanted to, you know, wear sneakers to the wedding. I didn't want to wear, you know, my dress shoes or anything like that because I'm not a big fan of dress shoes, as you guys know. So I was really missing a sneaker in my collection that I could wear with a suit, like with more like formal type of clothing. So that is actually the main reason why I purchased myself a pair of Margiela Gats. And I wore the Gats to the wedding, got a lot of compliments on the shoes actually from guests at the wedding. And which you know, of course, you know, felt good about that. And yeah, the Gats looked fantastic with the suit. I think it's such a versatile shoe. And the quality on it is great as well. You don't necessarily need to spend all that money to get that shoe because there's so many good options. Like a brand out of Sweden, I believe, called Novesta makes really good Gat alternatives for around 150 to 180, and it's much better quality than the Adidas BW Army, for example. So you don't necessarily need to get the Margiela's, but I wanted to get them, and yeah, I've been wearing those as well. Okay, so moving on to pickups. I see you have added a bunch of pickups here, Fobs. Break it down.
Yeah, man. I mean, just real quick, you talking about the Kith 8th Street Samba reminded me that we have the Gazelles coming from Kith as well.
Yes, sir. Waiting on those.
Almost forgot that.
Because it was like, what, like 5 months ago now that we ordered them?
They should be arriving soon, right? They should be like an end of summer release, I guess, or like delivery. So definitely looking forward to those.
It kind of feels really like you're nice, getting free shoes, right? Like when you order a pair from like 6 months ago and then it finally arrives, yeah. It feels like you got it for free.
Oh, for sure, because you that money is already a write-off, man. That is a sunk cost. It's already gone. So those are definitely like, that's girl math right there, or like sneakerhead math. Yes, facts. Nah, but in terms of pickups, I have a little bit, couple of shoes, couple of apparel pickups. One of the shoes is the Ronnie Feig A6 Gel Cayano 12.1 in the New York Knicks colorway. I actually signed up for the raffle on those via Kith randomly. I think the last day that it was open, I was like, oh, I forgot that these were dropping. Let me check them out. Signed up for both raffles. And then I think it might have been like either 6 hours later or like the next morning, I get a notification that I won one of the two raffles. I was like, ooh, I never win at Kith.
That's crazy because I know so many of my followers who enter those raffles and said that they were impossible to get. So congrats, man. Though that was a tough get.
Bro, they're beautiful, man. And as a Knicks fan, and you know, the Knicks are revitalized, doing really well.
Ooh, Knicks in the are NBA. Looking good.
Yes, the Nova Knicks. Yeah, I'm super happy with them. The Gel Cayano 12.1 is obviously Ronnie Feig's updated version of the Gel Cayano 12. It's very retro, it's very technical, but it's got a nice, more modern, updated sole unit. So that pair was, yeah, that one goes crazy. I haven't worn it yet. I've tried it on, obviously, and super comfortable, but I haven't worn it outside yet. So just waiting for the right moment to do that.
Why was it called, just one quick question about that shoe. Like, why is it called the 12.1?
So Ronnie Feig has a history of taking A6 sneakers and kind of updating them a little bit. And he's done the A6 Gel Light 3.1 as well, which is basically the Gel Light 3 upper with a modern sole unit with like gel cushioning, but like modern version gel cushioning on the bottom. So whenever there's like a 0.1, it means that Ronnie has done something to change the silhouette a little bit, either put a different sole unit on it, use different cushioning, updated the materials to make it a little bit more modern and more of a, like a hybrid design. Got it. So there is a Gel Cayano 12, but the 12.1 is Ronnie's version of it, basically. Then I was actually gifted a pair of Mizuno MXRs, which is Mizuno's latest retro style running shoe. Really lovely mesh upper, metallic synthetic overlays. You know, Mizuno is one of the most comfortable sneaker brands out there. The Wave Rider 10, beautiful shoe, and super comfortable, one of the best walking sneakers in the world. The MXR is no different, really comfortable, looks quite sporty, buys into the 2000s running vibe, which is totally my thing. So super happy. Thank you, Mizuno, shout out. And then moving into the apparel pickups, you know, not, you know, to speak about the Euros anymore, but I actually bought 3 Germany jerseys, which is ridiculous. I bought 2 white ones, one player edition with Toni Kroos on the back. And then I was like, don't really want a name on the back, but everything else is sold out because I got that on eBay. So I was like, you know what? I'm just going to go get another one, the regular version without a name on the back. So I have 2 white ones. And then I also got the pink one in a player edition without a name on the back. Really, really happy with those.
Shout out Toni Kroos too, by the way.
Shout out. Yeah.
Amazing retired career.
Last game ever against Spain. And then I got a UVU sweater or UVU sweater. It's a running brand out of London or the UK. And they're really cool because they do highly limited drops where they send you a password a couple hours before. And with that password, you can log in. And I believe that the items are only online for 12 to 24 hours. And when they're gone, they're gone. They never restock. So I got myself this really nice black sweater. It says like training club on the back in pink and has the UVU logo on the front chest. Yeah, man. So that's those were my pickups. What about you, man? What have you been bringing home?
So, okay. So I finally got myself a pair of shoes from this brand. It's the first time. And that is the Hoka Clifton 9. That's what I picked up. And the reason, the comfort level is kind of insane. Like it really does feel like you're walking on a cloud. Like I totally get what that means now after wearing this shoe. And the reason I got it is because I have been kind of getting more into running lately. And I guess like I just needed an upgrade in running shoes. I was wearing the Flyknit Racer for a while, but I've just really beat up those shoes, and I just wanted something that was had a bit better performance. So I went with the Hoka Clifton 9 after receiving a lot of recommendations, as that's a great beginner running shoe supposedly. And yeah, it's pretty great. I definitely can feel the impact absorption, I would say, like when running with the shoe on. So it's pretty great, and I got it in the Kith sale for 50% off. So I only paid 74 euros for it, which is pretty insane. that's really cheap for a Clifton 9. So yeah, shout out to Kith for that. And then I also picked up the New Balance 1906A. It seems like the 1906 is going to run out of letters now at this point to put after the 1906, because there's just been so many different versions of this shoe. And this A version seems to be like a completely, I guess, like deconstructed version of the shoe. It looks like they took the 1906 and put it into a blender, pretty much. And that's what the shoe looks like. There's like all kinds of, you know, mismatched pieces of leather. There's some extra leather flaps. The two like strings that go through the end logo are basically just hanging loose as well. So it's very interesting to look at. And the initial, like the OG colorway, is a really nice colorway as well. So they released early in Germany. Picked that one up. Also, I did a review on the channel in case you guys haven't watched it. Also, shout out to Oakley. Oakley sent me a pair of the Flesh sandals, and they didn't tell me before sending me the pair, like which colorway they would send. But I was just secretly hoping that they would send me this red one, because I thought that the Flesh sandal looked amazing in that red color. Like it's such a loud shoe with that red. And I don't really have anything that looks like that. And they did send me the red one. So nice. Big shout out to Oakley. And the last thing that I picked up, and this one was a clothing pickup, I did pick up the Germany track jacket. which is one of the most coveted track jackets, apparently, because everyone in the country has been wanting it, especially after seeing, you know, Jamal Musiala and Florian Wirtz rocking this jacket pregame. It's their pregame jacket, and it's so sick. It's like a vintage piece. It's like oversized. I feel like this is just a piece that I'm gonna own forever, you know, pass it down to my kids one day. It's just such a beautiful jacket. Great job, Adidas, with all of the track jackets actually that they've been putting out, especially the one for Spain also was pretty fire. And also the Colombian and Argentinian jerseys this Copa America. Really great job. I think Adidas has been killing it. All right, so now, guys, let's get into our big topic of the day, which is Nike, which is the problems faced by Nike so far this year. And it all kind of really became a huge news topic, not just in the sneaker world, but I kept seeing basically this article circulating everywhere, especially because I also follow business news a lot, about Nike's big stock price drop, which happened on June the 27th. So this was the day Nike released their earnings. And the stock had its biggest drop ever. So it dropped 20%. It's dropped 30% year to date, but it dropped 20% on that day, which was the biggest drop ever for the stock since it became since it IPO'd pretty much back in 1980. And considering how big of a company this is now, considering how big their market cap is, 20% in a day is almost unheard of. Like, that is an insane drop for a company that big. And of course, this made the news. I've seen so many videos on YouTube this week from all kinds of channels talking about whether or not this is the end of Nike. That's been a very popular YouTube title this week. Let's just say that. What I did was I actually went through the earnings call, and I actually read through the transcript just to look at some of the most interesting takeaways. And based on what the execs over at Nike have said, some highlights from the earnings calls. So they did say that 2025 will be a transition year for them. So that particular paragraph and that particular part of the earnings call, especially from what I read, was one of the reasons why the stock price dropped a lot, because it seemed like Nike themselves didn't really have a clear idea of when or how they're going to come out of this, and also like not really a clear path forward for when they can start seeing some of those earnings results that they've had previously. So they did stress that 2025 will be a transition year for the brand. They also went on to say that they did have some slight gains in their performance division, but that was more than offset by the decline in the lifestyle division. And also, they are planning on launching a new line of sneakers in spring of 2025. And it's going to be called basically the below $100 line. So we're going to be seeing a lot of new sneakers priced very cheaply. So that seems to be quite different than Nike's previous strategy. So going after this much, like the cheaper line of sneakers, competing with, Payless, or even Skechers in that price range. And also one part of the earnings call I thought was interesting was Nike, they specifically brought up their experience with Jordan Brand, saying that back in 2017 and 2018, Jordan Brand was suffering a lot, seeing double-digit declines. But then after 2018, Nike was able to successfully pivot and make Jordan Brand a lot more successful. So they saw many years in a row of double-digit growth in sales for Jordan Brand. And I thought that was interesting that they brought up that example as proof that they can turn things around, because I think it kind of coincided with sneaker preferences at the time. Because if you think about 2018, 2019, 2020, this was like the absolute height of Jordan Brand popularity. Jordan 1s, even GR colorways, were reselling for insane amounts of money. So I kind of feel like it was just the right timing for the brand at the time. So not necessarily proof that this was all Nike's doing. But yeah, they did bring that up. So yeah, I mean, overall, and just comparing it with some of their competitors. So far this year, Nike stock is down 30%. Adidas stock, meanwhile, year to date is up 20%. And meanwhile, I believe this is Decker, which owns On brand.
No, it owns Hoka.
Oh, sorry. Yeah, Decker, which owns Hoka. What's the company that owns On?
On is just listed, but it's still owned by the founders, and then I guess like the shareholders.
Right. Okay. So never mind. So On it's not Decker. It's actually On stock is up 40% this year. So Adidas up 20. On is up 40, Nike is down 30% year to date. So that's obviously really, really bad for the brand. And in my opinion, as someone who closely follows businesses, has been following, you know, the stock market for as long as I can remember, usually when you see something like this, it usually leads to someone taking the blame for this. So I do foresee possibly a big change at the top, possibly the CEO stepping down, because that's usually what happens when companies this big suffer 20 to 30% drops in market value. If you think about all the people that have Nike stocks in their portfolio, all these pension funds, there's a lot of pressure that usually gets put on the C-level management when there's huge declines like this. So I do think that that's probably going to happen at some point pretty soon. The CEO may be stepping down. But before we get into what some of the problems at Nike are, I just wanted to put things in perspective a little bit, just to kind of explain what some of these declines could be resulting from. So first of all, as you guys know, I'm sure this is in the news all the time, in your face all the time, we're talking about the cost of living nowadays. So inflation has been super high for the last 2 years, and that's basically led to people spending a lot less money on things they don't really need, like sneakers, like luxury goods. That's part of the reason why the sneaker resale market has absolutely crashed. Even the reselling market of other luxury items like watches, for example, pretty much anything that's not a necessity, has the demand for these kind of products have really, really shrunk. And when you think about Nike, who is the biggest player by far in the athleisure, not athleisure, but I mean like in the performance wear, performance wear industry. Definitely the company at the top is going to be the one that suffers the most. So I if you also compare it with other retailers like Lululemon, for example, who I would say, at least when it comes to athletic apparel, is a direct competitor of Nike. Lululemon has also suffered tremendously this year. Their stock price has taken a big tumble, and they have also blamed the economy for part of this reason. So naturally, Nike also is not, you know, immune to the economy. So definitely, I think that's one of the main reasons why the stock has been tanking. And we still have to, you know, before we put out all these videos talking about the end of Nike and all that, we still got to keep in mind that Nike right now is still bigger than pretty much all of its competition put together. Just to put things into perspective. So Nike last quarter was quarter four. They reported a revenue of $12 billion. That's just for the quarter. Meanwhile, On, as well as Hoka, their most successful year ever was when they got $2 billion in sales for the whole year. So that's how that's how far apart these companies are. One is making $12 billion per quarter. The other is making $2 billion per year. So it's nowhere close here. So there's no doubt that the competition is eating into the profits. And just in general, nowadays, because of democratization, there's just so many options for consumers. There's so many competition, that there's so much competition in the sneaker space, in the athletic apparel space, and they're all obviously eating into the biggest player, which is Nike. And that's been happening for a while. That's been a long running trend, basically like the democratization of resources. I don't know if you guys have read the book Shoe Dog, but in that book, Phil Knight, you know, talked about how he flew over to Japan and he couldn't find any suppliers. He was looking into phone books He was going into really sketchy places, trying to find someone to make his shoes. Well, it's not like that anymore, you know. Like now, if you wanted, actually, like I've looked into this myself. If you want to make your own pair of shoes, you can literally go on AliExpress. You can literally get that done in about 2 weeks' time. You can design it on the website. It'll get shipped to you in about 2 weeks' time. So that's literally how easy it is nowadays to get into the sneaker game yourself. So it's like things have changed. And of course, the biggest player is always going to be suffering when things become this spread out. So the rest of the field is definitely catching up. And the last thing I wanted to say is I've noticed this as a sneaker content creator. There's been a big change in footwear trends, you know, like sneakers, I think, have been absolutely dominating the space in terms of what people prefer to put on their feet over the last several years. But I would say this year and maybe towards the end of last year, I think preferences have kind of shifted towards other forms of footwear, like you know, loafers, like derby shoes, definitely clogs, also like Birkenstocks, you know, like sandals. People's footwear preferences, I feel, have like really, really changed a lot in the last year. And it's not so much they're just necessarily only wearing sneakers. And also, I think that has hurt Nike as well. So yeah, before we get into like the individual problems that has to do with Nike itself, I just wanted to talk about a broad view, like giving you like a bigger picture view as to what else is going on in the sneaker industry and the economy as a whole, which is causing this decline in Nike's performance.
Go
for it, man. Give us some of the problems that are happening at Nike specifically.
Well, before we get into the problems, I think it's just like super interesting as well, the way that you've painted this picture and especially putting into perspective. As you said, Nike still is the biggest company. It pulls in huge amounts of revenue compared to all of its competitors. And like you said, yeah, they are nibbling at Nike's market share, but I would almost liken it to, you know, those... It's going to be a really stupid analogy, but you know those like fish massage tanks where you put your feet in and then the feet, you know,
where
what
are
I mean?
You going with this, man?
So Nike is the feet and then all the competitors are the feet, you know, like, yeah. Ooh. Man, the fish are eating, but it's basically just your dead skin cells and it doesn't really do anything to the feet. It's not like the fish are piranhas, right?
Oh man, dude, that analogy was crazy. How'd you come up with that?
I don't know, it just popped into my head. But so like everybody's happy, right? Like Nike's not happy, right? But Nike is still top dog and the fish are getting their fill of nasty dead skin. But where I think that could become a problem down the line is if this keeps happening, you know, as you said, it is very important to big corporations, not just Nike, but any corporations of that size, that, you know, shareholders have trust in the company leadership and also that the stock market trusts that the company will turn things around. And they are big enough that they will get some leeway, and this leeway will be multiple years. But if the trend continues, there have been big market leaders that have failed. Reebok was one of the biggest sportswear brands in the 80s. Adidas was the biggest sportswear brand in the world in the 50s, 60s, and 70s before Nike came around. ASICS was huge. Nike was selling ASICS shoes as Blue Ribbon Sports. You know, just a shout out to the Shoe Dog book that you mentioned as well. Definitely a good read if you want to learn more about the history of Nike and Phil Knight. So things can change. Look at BlackBerry. BlackBerry was massive. Where are they now? You know what I mean? So it's very unlikely that an Apple, that a Google, that a Microsoft, that an IBM, that a Nike fails. But we're looking at this, you know, from like over a 2 to 5 to 10 year period. But if you zoom out and look at it over a 15 to 20 to 30 year period, there is a chance that Nike will be overtaken by other brands. Maybe the biggest brand in the world in 30 years doesn't even exist yet. You know what I mean? So,
yeah, true.
there is still an inherent risk, right? And that's why it's super important that they turn this around. And I think that some of the things they addressed in the earnings call, the, you know, the shoes under $100, speaking to a different kind of customer base, you know, recognizing that that sneakerheads are very niche and that not everybody's going to be spending $180 to $250, sometimes $300 on shoes. And obviously, if you move a million shoes that cost $100 versus 10,000 that cost, you know, $200 or $300, you're still making more money off of the $100 shoes. Basic economics, basic maths there. But I think a lot of things have been harming Nike in the last few years. One of it is, you know, poor quality products. I don't know how many times I see people on Twitter, on Instagram, complaining about glue stains on their new Jordans, on their new Nikes, etc., or stitching not being completely perfect or a little bit loose. And I feel like I never really see that with New Balance, with Asics, or at least you do see it, but not as often as with Nike. So Nike, I don't know. And this is just, we're just talking lifestyle products here, right? I think... And I might be, although I don't think I'm the only one here, but when I wear running shoes, I find Nike running shoes, Nike soccer boots, Nike basketball shoes, they tend to fit worse than competitors. They tend to not be as grippy if we're talking basketball. They give you blisters more often than other shoes do or other brands do. And I find that they just don't last as long as, you know, for running, for example, Asics, Saucony, New Balance, Brooks. Those are brands that are like specialty running brands. And maybe Nike has gotten a little bit too big for their own good. They started as a running brand. What are they now? I would argue that they're more of a lifestyle brand. They're not really a performance brand anymore. Sure, they have performance shoes, and they live off of the narrative that they sponsor elite performance athletes who wear their products that make them better than anyone else. But like, if you're looking at the actual quality of the stuff that us normal people can buy, it's not that great. And then you're looking at like, okay, you want to get into running? There's specialty running brands that make better running shoes. You want to get into basketball? I would argue that Nike basketball shoes are not the best on the market. You want to get into weightlifting? Yeah, Nike has weightlifting shoes, but you're probably going to buy something from a specialty weightlifting company. You want to buy boxing gear. Sure, you can buy Nike stuff if you want to flex, but like all of these sports, especially the niche sports, there's always more specialty, more specialized brands out there that make better product for that sport. I think Nike moves at economies of scale, and that's just the nature of who they are now and how big they are. But it's worth remembering that product and quality and delivering good product that actually works and works better than competitors is super important and actually should be central to their business plan, in my opinion.
Yeah, no, 100%. And I also wanted to say, you know, from a consumer point of view, I have felt many times when buying Nike sneakers that I'm getting ripped off, that I'm not getting the most for my money. You know, like when you compare, for example, their lifestyle products to the lifestyle products of like a New Balance, for example, right? You compare like a Jordan 4 nowadays, which goes for $210, compare that with a New Balance, which also goes for around the same price. And it's like such a huge difference in quality, in comfort, in longevity that you're getting, you know, between the two brands, that it's like, it doesn't even, like, it's not even worth comparing. Like it's one brand is producing very cheap quality products. Like just look at, for example, the Military 4s that dropped this year. I mean, they're saying it's leather on that shoe, but it kind of feels like plastic. If I don't know if you felt that pair in hand, but it, and that shoe is $210, you know, and everything I heard about everyone's reaction to it was, yeah, like, okay, I like the colorway, but it is a pretty poor quality product. And I do feel a bit ripped off. And I mean, if you just even look at some of their other pairs, like a shoe that I love that, you know, I used to call myself, I still call myself, you know, president of the Vomero fan club. But I will say that I always felt, and especially now, I do feel like the Vomero 5 is a very overpriced shoe. for what it is. Like, we're looking at a mesh sneaker here with not, you know, revolutionary cushioning, and it's retailing for $170 or 180 euros in some colorways. And that to me is ridiculous. You know, when you compare that with like an Asics, where you're also getting, for example, a mesh sneaker with gel technology, like the Gel 1130s, which retails for only $100. And it's the same, if not even better, technology on your feet, you know, you're only paying $100 for it, like almost half the prices of a Mero 5s. So I do feel like customers feel a bit ripped off when buying Nike these days, and they need to, that's something they got to address. I know, of course, they have targets to hit, margin to hit as well, but when the general consensus seems to be that, okay, I'm getting way better bang for my buck at all of your competitors, then I'm going to keep shopping at the competitors and I'm going to buy less of your product. So that's something they have to address.
For sure. And then a couple of other things that we kind of touched upon now is that Nike has, for me at least, shifted away from being a performance brand. I just said it earlier. They're more of a lifestyle brand. But being the best at performance is what drives their lifestyle business, in my opinion. And it's only a matter of time before not being the best performance brand will catch up to them on the lifestyle end, which is where you make most of your money. And part of that is due to the lack of innovation, right? Everybody relies on retro models, New Balance, Asics, Adidas, Nike. But I feel like, and I think this is an industry-wide problem, and I wrote a piece about it for Essence, I think that there's a lack of innovation. There's nothing really groundbreaking, really new, really exciting. I think the last exciting new Nike shoe was the React Element 87, which was a bit of a, you know, flash in the pan. And then you've got
I saw it at the gym like last week, and I remember my reaction at the time was, oh, what happened to those? Like, those used to be so popular like a few years ago.
I think they're a solid shoe, man, but like, I think retro just works so well that Nike, you know, the Dunk was doing really well, and they're like, ah, fuck it, we're just gonna ride the Dunk wave, you know. And then with Adidas, it's like, ah, the Samba and the Gazelle are doing really well, fuck it, we're just gonna ride this wave. And for Asics, I think Asics is a bit of a different animal because they are built on this like retro running model and 2000s and stuff like that. So like, that's kind of been their lifestyle business all along. They're not one to bring out like new lifestyle shoes, right? And a lot of their new technology does filter into the lifestyle a little bit through Kiko Kostadinov's work. But yeah, Nike, I mean, it's all about Air Max, it's all about the Dunk, it's all about the Jordan. Those are shoes from 30 years ago, you know what I mean? Even more. So I just think that they really need to look forward and look at like what's now, what can we create now that will be a classic, and you know, what can we create now on the performance side that will be a classic in 15 to 20, 30 years that will then secure the bag and secure our standing as the best brand in the world then, you know? And I feel like that's not really happening right now. But as we said before, there are, you know, a lot can change in a couple of years, and I think Nike will bounce back, or will at least look to try and bounce back, mostly also because of the share price and making sure that the shareholders are happy with the direction that the brand is going in. So I'm not too worried about Nike right now. What I am a little bit worried about is some of the strategic decisions they've made.
Yeah, but before we get into that, I just wanted to just quickly hit on just a couple of points just to talk about what you were saying, which is, first of all, the lack of innovation, right? So if you think about Nike's biggest and most promoted item this year, it's been the Air Max DN, right? Like, and the way they promoted that, it was like the next coming of sneaker technology, you know, like it was so in our face, like it was everywhere. It's been widely spread through several retailers, and promotion of that shoe has been really heavy. But like, what, like that shoe, first of all, like it's not the greatest looking shoe. And second of all, it's still just the same old Air Max technology. I mean, it's nothing new. The last time we really saw Nike innovate, I feel, and come up with a new technology and spread it across some of the other sneakers, I thought was when they came out with Flyknit, right? Like they came up with Flyknit, they put it on other models. It was a huge success. And we haven't really seen, yeah, I know you touched on the React element. That was a good shoe, but like you already touched on, it kind of just came and went. I feel like pretty much since Flyknit, there hasn't been like real technological innovation there. And one more thing I wanted to say was, speaking of how Nike's performance DNA seems to be kind of fading away. So I was recently watching a YouTube video, and shout out to this guy. His name is Jordan Rogers. He is a former marketer over at Nike. And he was pretty much comparing some of Nike's current marketing with some of its competitors. And he highlighted this one running commercial recently. So there's a girl running in some Nike sneakers. She's like sweating or whatnot. And then she basically like goes into a coffee shop and like buys a latte, and the whole commercial was centered around, oh, these shoes are perfect for, you know, it's perfect for your run, and then for your after run where you can like you can go grab a coffee in this and you can go run in this too, you know. And he was trying to make a point of how like if you're like a real runner, like you would find this commercial like so cringe. Because this is absolutely not what real runners do. They don't just stop in the middle of their run to go get a coffee. And it doesn't really tell the story of running. And he was comparing it with like other brands that, you know, like some upstart brands, running brands that was really like, you know, talking about the story of running and making it so theatrical and just had like really solid marketing. And comparing it to Nike, which seems to have gotten away from this performance aspect. So that's, yeah, I mean, it just kind of goes back to your point about how the company seems to be moving away from performance and just focusing much more on lifestyle. And yeah, that's definitely seems to be catching up with them. But yeah, I mean, moving into what we've seen so far as what could potentially be their new strategy this year or next year, it seems to be digging even deeper into their lifestyle, I guess, new way forward, because they are planning on bringing back some what we used to be calling them grails, or sneakers that we never thought we'd ever see on a shelf ever again. Because Nike seems to be not only cracking open the vault, they seem to be just putting some dynamite in there and blowing the vault completely open, because they're bringing back so many announced shoes so far. So the Wu-Tang Dunks seem to be coming back, the Undefeated Fours as well, and most recently we saw that Pata will be bringing back the Chlorophyll Air Max Ones. So all three of these sneakers, legendary shoes, and who knows what else we'll be seeing coming back. At this point, I wouldn't be surprised if he got like the Air Yeezys. You know, I would not be surprised. But it seems to be that Nike's strategy is not to innovate anymore, but instead to continue getting these quick cash grabs, which is like, just let's just bring back, let's open up the vault and just give them everything we gave them in the past. So that seems to be their solution. What are your thoughts on this?
Bro, super lazy, man. Lazy, 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 lazy. I think I will say that there is a difference for me between the Chlorophyll Patas and the Wu-Tang Dunks and the Undefeated Fours. Because the Chlorophyll Patas, they were released back in the day, right? You could actually go and buy them. The Wu-Tang Dunks and the Undefeated Fours, those are myths. Those are legends. Those were given to friends and family. Those were limited to under 100 worldwide. You know what I mean? Whereas the Chlorophyll Patas, there were definitely quite a lot more. And the Chlorophyll Patas also, Air Max Ones, after a while, because of the air bubble and the sole, you can't wear them if they're too old. And so a lot of people who had those or who have the shoes, they can't wear their pair anymore, which is sad. So I think bringing out a new pair makes sense. I haven't looked at it too closely, but I believe that it's slightly different as well. So you can definitely say that, like, you know, this is the 2024 version and this is the OG version. So they're the same shoe, but different versions of the same shoe. Whereas the Wu-Tang Dunks and the Undefeated Fours, that's like bringing back the Freddy Krueger Dunks, you know, like those were shoes that were never supposed to release. Nobody had a real public chance of getting these shoes. And for me, that's just a blatant, lazy cash grab to bring that back. It has nothing to do with community, has nothing to do with culture, has nothing to do with storytelling or fostering some sort of brand identity and loyalty among the younger crowd. It's literally just saying, yo, these cost $20,000 on StockX. How about getting something that looks identical to it for $150? It's super lazy, man. I'm not a fan at all.
Yeah, and I think it kind of, you know, has the potential to just further dilute the brand, further saturate the brand. And there are, I think, potential long-term consequences to the reputation of the brand by doing this. But at the same time, you know, I've seen a lot of reactions to this news online, on Instagram, everywhere. I've seen a lot of people saying, oh, yeah, you know what? Fuck them. Screw Nike. Like, if they want to bring these back, then great. As long as I get my pair, I don't care what happens to the brand. You know, like, Nike has been screwing us all this time with super high prices. Well, yeah, now if they're suffering and that leads to them bringing back all these pairs I could never get before, and now I'm actually going to be able to have access to them, then you know what? Whatever. Screw Nike. Let me just get my pair and I'll be happy. And I've seen a lot of, you know, very similar reactions like that. So, I mean, I do think when all these shoes release, they're all going to sell out. Nike is going to get the cash that they want. But I think it will dilute the brand even more. And it's kind of like you said, you know, like 30 years from now, we don't know if Nike is still going to be number one in this game anymore. I think moves like this further continue the trend of, you know, other brands taking over. But I mean, at some point, you know, every giant, you know, becomes less of a giant over time. Maybe it's just like an inevitable thing. We don't know. But that being said, I hope this episode doesn't sound like, you know, like us hating on Nike or anything like that, because I think both of us can agree we absolutely love Nike, everything they've done for the sneaker game. I don't think, you know, a sneaker game would even exist without Nike. I mean, they are the company, the OGs that started this whole thing. And as a result, we have tons and tons of sneakerheads all over the world. So this is not meant to sound like an obituary for Nike. It's more so, you know, we're just kind of watching this giant kind of, you know, fall a little bit. But I'm sure they'll be able to get back up. And I'm looking forward to when they do, because I'm looking forward to seeing much more innovation, much more. I would love to see them, you know, get back to their roots a little bit and giving us, you know, sneakers that we love. Do you have any final thoughts, Fobs?
No, I mean, I think you've summarized that really well. I think that, you know, we all want to see Nike back on top. The sneaker community, the sneaker culture is better when Nike is on its game, when all of the brands are on their top game, right? So we just want to see that competition between brands, and I have no doubt that Nike will be back on top soon. So yeah, definitely looking forward to that, man.
Yep. So let's get into our upcoming sneakers for the next couple of weeks, and it's actually full of Nikes, I'm not gonna lie, and some pretty cool Nikes too that I know me and you both have our eyes on. The first one is on July the 19th, so we'll be seeing one of my grails, absolutely one of my grails, the CDG Foamposite will be dropping in this Olympics colorway, which I think arguably even looks better than the first two. It's like it's got this like marbleized, like cement type of look to it. And from what I read, this time the retail price will only be $300 rather than $520. That's what the original two colorways sold for. And the only unfortunate thing is that it seems to be a Dover Street Market exclusive, so it will be difficult to get. But for me, this is like the must-have, absolute must-have shoe of the month for me. So I am going to be, I already have an alarm set up. I booked off, you know, any kind of meetings at that time at work. I'm like, nobody's doing a meeting with me when the shoe drops because I got to try to get it. So the CDG Foamposites dropping on July the 19th. I hope I can get them. Also on July the 19th, the Stussy LD1000, the green colorway, will be releasing for a second time. It already dropped last week, but I guess they're restocking it again this week. Then on July the 20th, we have the AE1 Low, which is the low-top version of the AE1, of course. And people are quite excited for this because actually a lot of people had that criticism about the AE1s was that, you know, they were just waiting for a low-top to drop. And that's what this is. And it's a really nice, clean colorway as well. Also on July the 20th, I know, Fobs, you have your eyes set on this one.
Ooh, yeah.
We got the Nigel Sylvester Jordan 4 RM, or the low top Jordan 4s. They are going to be quite difficult to get in Europe for those of our European listeners listening in, because it seems like very few retailers are getting them. And the sneakers app is getting them, of course, but there seems to be a wider release in the US. So good luck to everyone. And Fobs, I hope you also get a pair.
Nice. Thank you. Me too.
And then on July the 23rd, we'll be seeing the Air Max 1 Jacquemus releasing in the white and red colorway. It will be dropping on Sneakers App as well as some other retailers. And if you guys want to watch an early review, go check out my channel. I just dropped one a few days ago. And then finally on July the 27th, just in time for the Paris Olympics, we have the Jordan 4 Paris Olympics dropping. Or I've read that this colorway is also called the gray cement or wet cement. I think it was wet cement. Yeah, because I'm opening up the Kith app right now and it says wet cement.
Yep,
interesting colorway name. The Jordan 4 Paris Olympics or wet cement will be dropping on the 27th. A lot of people saying this is like the poor man's Jordan 4 cause. I know you used to have the cool grays, right? The Jordan 4 cool grays. So what about this pair? Are you going for this one as well?
I don't know if I'm going for it, but I do think it looks very nice. I do like the shade of gray. It reminds me a little bit about of New Balance gray. It is quite, I feel like it's a little bit hit or miss depending on what images you look at. Some images it's like very tonal, and then other images the two different grays are very contrasting. It's probably a shoe that I would have to see in person first, but I do like the look of it.
I don't know if they'll sell out because Jordan 4s aren't really selling out these days. So fingers crossed, if you're able to get that for under retail, I think, yeah, that's something I would want to add to the collection, no doubt. But that pretty much wraps up this episode of the Kickback Pod. Thank you, everyone, for listening in. For all the feedback and for just all the support on the pod. We had a bit of a hiatus since the last episode, but we'll definitely, you know, try to bring these episodes more frequently for you guys. Appreciate all of you for listening. Appreciate you, Fobs, for coming in once again and giving us another fire episode. Until next time, guys, peace.
Yeah, guys, thanks for listening. Always fun to be on these with you, JD. And till the next one. Peace.